There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Talking healthcare now, I was at the Abu Dhabi Ideas Weekend on Friday. The keynote speaker that day was David Cameron, former British Prime Minister, but lots of other people on the agenda. They talk about moonshots. They have four moonshots, as they call them, four big issues that they're trying to address. And the first was polarisation in society and the rise of populism. The second was the fight against cancer. So it's not just politics and economics. And they had lots of experts talking about the fight against cancer. And one of them was Dr. Lily Peng, who works at Google. She is a qualified MD, a qualified doctor, but now she's a medical researcher at Google. And she says artificial intelligence can help fight not just cancer, but a whole bunch of other diseases. She's a fascinating person. I sat down with her to find out more. This is what she told me.
There are a couple of things that are really interesting about this technology in terms of disease detection in general. One is that these technologies work really well on large data sets and in general screening images. There's a lot of them. It's actually highly accurate. So the algorithms that these technology train are much accurate than other sort of techniques that we've applied before. And it's because the systems are able to model pretty complex processes like images in a screening mammogram, for example. And the other thing that's really kind of interesting about these technologies is that you have an opportunity to train an algorithm without explicitly having to write rules. So traditionally in machine learning, if you wanted to write a spam detector, for example, you would write a bunch of rules. You say, you know, if this email was from this sender or if this email, you know, was sent during this time, then yeah, it's likely spam. Well, what you have with deep learning is that you actually don't have to write those rules. You just give them lots of examples, and then the network learns itself, and it produces a very high, accurate algorithm. So these are sort of very interesting things in terms of how this has been, this can be applied to medicine.
Tell us a bit more about that and other specific areas of cancer detection where this can and is making a difference.
So a lot of the research in this area is quite early. And just as a reminder for a lot of folks, this is not the first time that machine learning's been used for mammography screening. What's unique about these technologies is that it's actually much, much more accurate than the other techniques that we have. And so we've done some work, our group has done some work in screening for diabetic eye disease. But a lot of the principles behind what we've learned and we've done there kind of applies in cancer screening. So for example, making sure that that machine learning works really well for large data sets, like screening data sets like mammograms or lung cancer screening and that kind of stuff, where you just have lots of people kind of go through and take the images, and where there's a shortage in people who can read those images. And also people who get tired, you know, experts do get tired after, you know, interpreting them. You know, there's a figure out there that says, you know, about 1 in 7 mammograms might be actually misread. And due to a variety of reasons, reader fatigue being one of them. So, you know, there's clearly an opportunity here for, you know, highly accurate algorithms that do not fatigue to essentially enhance what physicians are doing, right? So can it help you screen out the normal ones? Can it help you double check your reads? Those are all really tangible ways that algorithms like these can add a benefit.
You touched on diabetes there in India. You did some really interesting research. Tell us what the research was trying to find out and what you discovered.
So in India, there's a shortage of eye specialists. The shortage is about 127,000 is the last calculation. And as a result, you know, one of the most common complications and one of the most common causes of preventable blindness these days is due to diabetes. And we all know that, you know, the right thing to do is screen these patients once a year, roughly. But there just isn't enough doctors to kind of do this work. And so we partnered with a couple of hospitals in India who was doing screening. They had been screening for cataracts and other types of eye diseases already, but they wanted to expand to, you know, diabetes because, you know, it's such a big issue now. We actually started working with them as a, you know, kind of passion project on our team, a bunch of volunteers, and started working with them to train an algorithm that will help them interpret more images and help them kind of get to a diagnosis more efficiently. So that's how we started there. We trained an algorithm for diabetic eye disease in particular. We then took that algorithm, we published a paper about it, and then we took that algorithm and studied it in clinical studies there, clinical trials there. And so we're kind of wrapping that stuff up, and we actually last December deployed this AI system in one of the hospitals, Aravind, where we were assisting the readers, but that was actually a really, really great milestone for our team to be able to kind of, you know, give a piece of software back that we'd been working on for a couple of years now.
If I can ask you about heart disease, which was some of your most recent research just a couple of weeks ago, and that generated an awful lot of buzz because together with strokes, heart disease, the world's biggest killer. Tell us a bit about your research and what you discovered.
So we made this discovery while we were working on diabetic eye disease. And, you know, it makes sense. Diabetes is actually one of the biggest risk factors for cardiovascular disease. So we think of them kind of in a pair. And so what we found was that, remember how I mentioned these algorithms are really good at learning from example. So we started off giving the algorithms examples of, you know, different severities of diabetic retinopathy. So we would say, here's many, many images of, you know, a patient with no disease. And here are many, many images of a patient with really bad proliferative disease. And the software just figured out what the rules were and then was able to reproduce it. Now, imagine if you ask the network to predict something that human beings don't usually predict from these images, like a cardiovascular risk. So in general, doctors can kind of look at an eye and say, well, this looks kind of scary and this one looks kind of okay, but we're not really good at quantifying what that association is. One of the algorithms we trained, what we did was we showed them pictures of, you know, a bunch of folks who had a heart attack or a stroke within 5 years of taking that photo. So they took the photo, 5 years later, they had a heart attack or stroke. And then we showed the network a lot of pictures of people who did not. And we said, you figure out what makes these images different. And so what we had found was, you know, after we trained the algorithm, was that about 70% of the time, if we presented the network with an image of a person who had an event and an image of a person who did not, it could pick out the right one 70% of the time. So that's not as good as our DR algorithm, but it's actually quite comparable to current cardiovascular risk factors. And the current cardiovascular risk factor predictors require blood test. So that, you know, I don't know if you remember getting your fasting to get your cholesterol, getting your blood drawn and whatnot. The reason why doctors do that is to get a sense of what your cardiovascular risk is, what your risk of, you know, a 5 year or 10 year heart attack is, and then we treat you. And so the promise of something like this is if we could get it right, if we got more data, and, you know, this is really a proof of concept, but if we got more data, maybe we could come up with something that's non-invasive.
Finally, let me ask you to put this in some kind of context, almost historical context. If you look at these advances now that you and other researchers are working on in what we can broadly call artificial intelligence, how significant do they stack up against, I don't know, some of the big historical advances in medicine that I think of, things like penicillin or anesthetic or others like it?
I mean, this is clearly one of the most exciting things that I've come across. So, my backstory was I trained as a physician scientist. And so one of the things I've always wanted to do is bring sort of breakthrough technologies from the bench to the bedside. And so this is clearly one of the ones that I think is extremely exciting. In terms of discoveries, though, if you think about the impact that these technologies actually have on, you know, care, it's as much about the discovery of that technology as well as the implementation. Right. So if you don't have good guidelines on when to use penicillin and when to not, you actually get antibiotic resistance instead of, you know, a treated infection. And I think it's a similar way that you think about how to apply the AI or the machine learning in a way that actually helps healthcare systems screen for cancer in a more cost-effective way. And then also how it enables us to screen more people. So yes, I think the technology is really exciting. I think the most important thing from here is understanding how to implement this technology in such a way that's really, really helpful to everyone.
That is the voice of Dr. Lily Peng. She was talking to me on Friday at Abu Dhabi Ideas Weekend.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.